This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
This advertisement feature is paid and presented by Go Türkiye. Türkiye is a golfer's paradise, and much of that is down to Belek on the country's southern Mediterranean coast. Courses here cut through lush pine forest, set on fast, sandy ground that's kept in immaculate condition all year round. And for those never quite ready to call it a day, Belek is also host to the first full 18-hole floodlit course in Europe. Local pro Dennis Sutmaz is lucky enough to call Belek her training ground.
There are more than 15 courses. You can play golf in winter and summer.
And once the round is done, long lunches replace scorecards and spas, hammams and slow afternoons take over.
When I'm not playing golf, I usually go to the beach, tan, go into the sea. You just feel like you're in another world.
Because in Belek, luxury isn't about excess. It's about time well spent. Plan your next detour at goturkiye.com today.
Hello, Greg Jenner here. I'm the host of You're Dead to Me, the BBC comedy show that takes history seriously. Every episode, I pair up a top historian with a fantastic comedian, and we have a lovely, funny, fascinating chat about a different subject from world history. And in this new series, we're beginning with an epic voyage through the story of Homer, the Iliad, and the Odyssey. And that's with Kyle Smith-Bino joining us. And then we'll be learning about Francis Galton and the racist, discredited pseudoscience of eugenics with Desiree Birch. We'll meet many medieval saints in their bone boxes with Rachel Parris. So, if that sounds like your sort of thing, listen to You're Dead to Me wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. Bye.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, David here with a new series of explainers from The Briefing Room. In today's podcast, we look at the history of tariffs, something that's dominated the first few months of President Trump's second term. Where did he get the idea from? Ben Carter spoke to Douglas Irwin, Professor of Economics at Dartmouth College in New Hampshire in the United States.
Throughout his political career, Donald Trump hasn't had many kind words for his predecessors and rivals.
Sleepy Joe Biden.
Quote, cheating Obama.
Crooked Hillary. She is a crooked one.
These are just a few he's criticised over the years. But if you listen to Trump's second inauguration speech in January, you might have been surprised to hear him waxing lyrical about one former president.
We will restore the name of a great president. William McKinley to Mount McKinley, where it should be and where it belongs. President McKinley made our country very rich through tariffs and through talent. He was a natural businessman.
William McKinley was a Republican politician from the state of Ohio, and he represented Ohio in the House of Representatives for many years, where he's chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, author of the McKinley Tariff, but he later, in the election of 1896, became president of the United States until he was assassinated in 1901.
The McKinley Tariff came into law in October 1890. Great Britain was an industrial powerhouse, and the US was importing our iron and steel. It was also importing raw materials from Canada. Tariffs weren't new, but...
this pushed tariffs in general a little bit higher. But we also put some goods on the duty-free list, such as sugar. But mainly, most of these tariff acts in the late 19th century were sort of adjusting the rates, some up, some down, but on net higher in the case of McKinley. They were used as much to protect domestic industries from foreign competition as to raise revenue, but they were definitely a part of the American political scene.
At this time, tariffs raised about half the federal government's revenue. Excise taxes had been introduced in the Civil War, and the idea of introducing income tax was under discussion. As you heard earlier, Donald Trump said McKinley
made our country very rich
through tariffs. But was it actually McKinley's tariff that created this wealth?
Well, this was a general period of industrial expansion in the U.S. from after the Civil War right up to World War I. There were some ebbs and flows in the economy. A lot of it, the boom didn't happen right after the McKinley Tariff. It took place in the later 1890s and then into the early 1900s. But there were a lot of other things going on during this period as well. We may have been relatively closed to trade because of the high tariffs, but we were very open to international capital inflows, such as British buying and financing the construction of railroads through their purchases of bonds. We were open to immigration. So there's a period of mass immigration. A lot of workers came from Europe to the United States, adding to the labor force. It was a period of Western expansion. We were able to mine new raw materials such as iron ore in Minnesota and copper in the Southwest. And we were also open to British technology. So that kept the steel industry productive by borrowing the best practices from Britain. So we are closed on certain dimensions in terms of trade, but we're also open to this great expansion with an increase in capital, an increase in labor, and an improvement in technology. All these things were going on at the same time.
All that considered, was the McKinley tariff a success story?
It proved to be very politically unpopular, and the Republicans lost in the midterm elections of November of 1890. They lost both the House and the Senate, I believe, in a fairly big rout. And a few years later, there was a financial crisis in Britain, the Bearings crisis that spread to the U.S., and the U.S. Slumped into a depression in the 1890s, where we had an elevated unemployment rate of over 10% for about 3 or 4 years. And that was associated less with the tariff itself, but certainly it wasn't completely independent of it. And so it got tainted a little bit with the idea that it didn't lead to this wonderful economy.
And during his time in politics, McKinley's views on tariffs evolved.
When he was president, he had a little bit of a different view than when he was just a representative from the state of Ohio. You sort of look more to a national constituency and what might be in the national economic interest. When you represent a particular district, you're really just concerned about workers and voters in your particular district. But as president, he took more of an expansive vision and thought that maybe tariffs should come down to promote U.S. trade in the rest of the world.
So you might be wondering why Donald Trump is such a big fan of McKinley. Douglas Irwin says it's probably because he's viewed as a Republican icon. Karl Rove, who served as Deputy Chief of Staff for George W. Bush, wrote a book lauding McKinley's political achievements. McKinley did win the 1896 and 1900 elections very convincingly. And in his Liberation Day speech, Donald Trump complained that post-McKinley,
in 1913, for reasons unknown to mankind, they established the income tax so that citizens, rather than foreign countries, would start paying the money necessary to run our government.
The 1913 Revenue Act did see the introduction of income tax at a basic rate of 1% and a top rate of 6%. Only 2% of the population paid tax at all. This did not replace the income from tariffs, although the average tariff rate did drop from around 40% to 25%. And there's another problem.
One reason why the tariffs were sort of worked in the late 19th century as a revenue-raising device is the federal government was only spending about 2% of GDP. We didn't have a welfare state. We didn't have a big defense establishment. And so now government spending is just so large, there's no way you could tax imports and pay for all that spending. You really need a domestic tax source.
Today, the federal government is spending around 25% of GDP, around $7 trillion a year. Some estimates suggest that Trump's new tariffs will raise around $3 trillion over the next decade, which leaves a $67 trillion shortfall. Maybe Donald Trump understands all of this. Maybe he doesn't. But it's probably not unfair to say that trying to apply economic lessons from the 1890s and early 1900s to the globally intertwined economies of 2025 might prove problematic.
Ben Carter talking to Douglas Irwin. Thanks very much for listening to This Explainer. We'll be publishing these every week in the new mini-series, so make sure you follow The Briefing Room on BBC Sounds or wherever you get your podcasts so that you don't miss an episode when we publish them. And also remember, you can go back and listen to any of our recent episodes on BBC Sounds. They're available now. Until the next time, goodbye.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
I'm Annabelle Dees, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Shadow World, The Smuggler.
People coming to this country was making me successful.
A year ago, I met a people smuggler, a British man who joined an international smuggling gang. I uncover his motivations and his methods.
I'm telling you now how easy it is.
And investigate whether his tactics are still possible.
That does leave a really exploitable loophole for individuals who want to do harm.
Shadow World, The Smuggler. Listen now on BBC Sounds.
Hello. Hello, Greg Jenner here. I'm the host of You're Dead to Me, the BBC comedy show that takes history seriously. Every episode, I pair up a top historian with a fantastic comedian, and we have a lovely, funny, fascinating chat about a different subject from world history. And in this new series, we're beginning with an epic voyage through the story of Homer, the Iliad, and the Odyssey. And that's with Kyle Smith-Bino joining us. And then we'll be learning about Francis Galton and the racist, discredited pseudoscience of eugenics with Desiree Birch. We'll meet many medieval saints in their bone boxes with Rachel Parrott. So if that sounds like your sort of thing, listen to You're Dead to Me wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. Bye.